Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney Nagebauer. Today, we are joined by Joseph Bogard with the Save Our Wild Salmon Coalition. And if you recall, we actually spoke earlier this year before the pandemic, and a lot has changed since then. And we were talking about sort of two separate processes that were going on. And so we are chatting today to get an update on those. The first was a federal environmental impact statement, and in a very tiny nutshell, and I'll let Joseph expand on this, the feds essentially decided to slightly modify their operations with spill and keep the four Lower Snake River dams in place. And of course, all of us orca people out there and salmon people out there are really interested in the Columbia Basin because, you know, these fish are feeding our endangered southern resident killer whales. Joseph, can you explain a little bit more about this federal decision and what it means?
Sure, and I'll back up a little bit and simply say, you know, people may recall this has been a long-standing issue, salmon restoration in the Columbian snake system, and really the most critical issue, and it's been the toughest, is, you know, whether or not to restore the Lower Snake River and its salmon by removing its federal dams. And I think in this FEIS, the Federal Environmental Impact Statement process, that was sort of the elephant in the room. It was something that the judge, the FEIS is supposed to be a comprehensive environmental review of different options, alternatives that can be used to address a problem. In this case, the problem is salmon and steelhead in the Columbia Basin that are threatened with extinction as a result of the federal hydro system, the biggest single human-caused source of mortality for Snake River, Columbia River fish, by a long shot. And so the court found in 2016, Judge Simon down in Portland ordered he found that the previous environmental impact statement, which was almost 20 years old now, was out of date and needed to be updated, and the feds were required, you know, would be required to do this full comprehensive analysis of alternatives and develop based on that a long-term plan for recovering salmon that was finally going to work and be legal and restore these fish. The decision to do that came in 2016, or the requirement by the court to do that came in 2016, and many of us viewed this as a great opportunity for the region to, you know, have a dialogue, figure out our options, and develop a solution that moves us all forward. Unfortunately, the federal agencies didn't see it that way, and of course, this is under the Trump administration. You know, I think that in a nutshell, the FEIS proved to be a big disappointment. And a missed opportunity that really could have provided information and the foundation for some real solutions in the region. The court ordered it in 2016. You folks may remember there was a big public comment period when the draft EIS came out in February. You know, thousands of course, the pandemic was rearing its head at the same time and made public meetings impossible. And so there was a bunch of, you know, online comments and organized telephone calls by the federal agencies. But the bottom line was it was an insufficient process, and it was compressed by the Trump administration under an executive order. And, you know, people, I think, did a good job submitting all kinds of comment, grassroots comment, highly technical comment. The final came out in the end of July. So just about 5 weeks ago. I think the bottom line from the perspective of people outside of the agencies is, you know, whether you were from the tribes, I think a lot of folks, even in the utility sector, were unhappy with this. Many folks in the ORCA, salmon, clean energy, and other advocacy communities were sort of highly dissatisfied. It was, again, a missed opportunity. A lot of the analysis was thrown together, not comprehensive, and doesn't provide the kind of information we need to make good decisions that are going to move, that can move everyone forward in the region. To get back to the key issue that you raised, and I think I did too, is, you know, the fate of the Lower Snake River dams. What the agencies decided after looking at a number of different options, including increased spill. Spill is a operational measure that is used at the dams to help improve salmon survival for the young fish headed out to the ocean. It sends water over the tops of dams that helps get them to the ocean more quickly and more safely. While it's helpful as a short-term measure, I don't think spill, I think the scientists agree, is an effective long-term measure. And what's happened in recent years is the courts, at the request of advocates and the state of Oregon and Nez Perce Tribe, has required the agencies to steadily ratchet up the levels of spill because fish need more help and because the agencies weren't doing enough and their plans were being ruled illegal on a, you know, this is, the, I think, the fifth plan, sixth plan, excuse me, to be released. And you know, from all accounts, there will be litigation. And from all accounts, from various quarters, it is another illegal and inadequate plan. The preferred alternative, FEISs, EISs have a, you know, typically have a preferred alternative. And in this case, what the agencies, set up as their preferred alternative is sort of increased spill along the lines of an interim agreement that was brokered between some of the federal agencies, the Nez Perce Tribe, Oregon, and Washington, to increase spill in a flexible way in the spring months between 2019 and 2021, an interim plan widely recognized as a short-term plan while the long-term plan got put in place. What the federal agencies did was embraced this short-term interim plan that was clearly inadequate to protect and restore these fish, and we're headed back into a new round of litigation. There's a couple things I want to point out in what was, you know, a broadly panned FEIS process and final product. The agencies in their analysis did recognize that restoring the Lower Snake River would deliver the highest benefits to critically endangered salmon in the Snake River Basin. So we'll give them credit for that. They acknowledged that the tremendous benefits that restoring Lower Snake River would have. They also acknowledged that their document, after 4 years of work and tens of millions of dollars in expense, wouldn't end the debate and wasn't delivering the solution that the region needs. And they highlighted and emphasized the need for continued regional conversation to come up with long-term solutions. So on one hand, that's super frustrating that they undertook this exercise and knowingly delivered a product that didn't even attempt to meet the needs of the region. On the other hand, it properly recognizes where we need to go from here. And I do want to sort of turn to that, but I'll take a breath here, Whitney, and turn it back to you.
Well, yeah, I had one other question about this final environmental impact statement. Part of it was a biological opinion about the southern resident killer whales and, you know, where they fit into this larger picture. And one of the things that was mentioned there was that the amount of hatchery production sort of offset any impacts from the dams, and that, in fact, today there are more Snake River fish than in the 1960s. Now, how do you respond to something like that?
Well, there's, you know, what was Mark Twain's phrase? There's lies, dam lies, and then there's statistics. And I think the bottom line is it's just not true. The agencies have sought for years to de-emphasize the connection between southern resident orcas and Columbian Snake River Chinook. They denied it for years until it became they could no longer do that because the scientific information was overwhelming. And now their strategy is to downplay it. Sure, they feed some of those fish, but we've done such a good job that they're doing fine, and we don't need to do any more. And I can tell you with a high level of confidence that finding on the part of the agencies will be one of many things that comes under challenge in a new round of litigation. One thing I'll point out is the Snake River Basin. I mean, there's a number of reasons why advocates, salmon, orca, and other advocates have been so focused on the Snake River Basin restoring the Lower Snake River. And it's because of its recovery potential. Anywhere in the Columbia Basin, the Snake River Basin has far and away the greatest salmon restoration potential for steelhead, for summer Chinook, for fall Chinook. And then, of course, also the recovery potential is not as great, but it is essential for Snake River sockeye, which were the first salmon in the United States listed under the Endangered Species Act back in 1991. And I think Snake River sockeye are probably the most endangered salmon in the basin. The important thing for everyone to keep in mind is, we've spent, as a nation and a region, we've spent over $18 billion over the last 25 years on salmon restoration activities in the Columbian Snake Rivers, and we haven't recovered a single population. It is crazy. It's unsustainable. It's unaffordable, and obviously we need to change. Your work and our work and a lot of others is aimed at that. And I think we're making progress. And I'll get back to that. Another feature of the Snake River Basin, and another reason why orca and salmon advocates in particular have been so focused on the connection between Snake River fish and southern resident orcas, is the Snake River Basin historically was, anywhere on the West Coast, the greatest producer of spring Chinook. And spring Chinook are a critical food source for southern resident orcas, because spring Chinook gather, they're available in the winter months. They're gathering, they're staging at the mouth of the river in salt water and available to orca in the winter months when very few other fish are available to eat. Historically, the southern residents have a habit of spending a bunch of time at the mouth of the Columbia River in the winter and early spring, feeding on those spring Chinook that historically, would flood into the river and be available. But because Snake River dams, that once tremendously abundant Snake River population, spring Chinook population that utilized the Snake River Basin has been decimated. And, we get returns that are in the tens of thousands. This year it's about 10,000 wild Snake River spring Chinook. Hatcheries do add, some additional fish. Maybe it doubles it. I don't quite know the exact number. But the point is this is a This is a tiny fraction of what used to return to the Snake River Basin in terms of spring Chinook. And again, if those spring Chinook aren't available at the mouth of the Columbia, there just aren't that many other fish in those winter months for the orca to access. And that creates a huge bottleneck and challenge for their, metabolism, reproduction, and survival. And so I think that's a really important thing to emphasize. Of course, the feds, ran roughshod over that fact. There's been a number of papers, letters, statements by orca experts and scientists underscoring this critical connection. And I think it was a letter back in 2018 where orca scientists said they have a very hard time imagining protecting the southern residents from extinction without restoring the Lower Snake River. So it's a critical piece of the puzzle here. It's not the only one. And some of the sort of critics or opponents of restoring the snake have said, it's not a silver bullet. And of course, they're right. We need to be restoring populations of Chinook throughout the range where the orcas live across the Northwest coast. But it cannot ignore or avoid the importance of restoring the Lower Snake and its stocks to really fill that important nutritional dietary niche in those winter months when there's very little other fish available.
So restoring the fish and protecting the orcas, really boils down to having conversations with people. And the second process that we touched on earlier this year, it had to do with a state-led stakeholder process. And we were sort of in the middle of that, and a final report hadn't been released yet. Where did that end? And is there a future in that sort of process moving forward?
I think the answer is yes. There is progress being made in the region. And I think it's important for all of your listeners to recognize that. And for those that have been active reaching out to Governor Inslee, Governor Brown, members of Congress, you all, we all deserve a lot of credit for moving the politics. And I'll underscore that, I think everyone recognizes the great urgency facing both salmon and orca today. The way I've started thinking about it is, especially in response to the recent birth from Tahlequah of a calf, they are doing what they can. They are doing their part, and we have to do our part. And I'm including in the we our policymakers who really have the power to make the decisions and create solutions. So I want to emphasize the urgency for action. And I want to give credit to everyone who's moved the politics. And I want to say also that, we've still got some ground to cover here. And I want to encourage everyone, maybe inspired by the new calf, and hopefully there's another one on the way from another female, to continue that pressure and the calls and the letters and the emails into Senator Murray, Senator Cantwell, Governor Inslee, and so forth. Returning back to the status of the stakeholder conversation, when we spoke last time, we discussed the Washington State stakeholder process, which is something that emerged out of the Orca Task Force that the governor convened several years ago. It got funded. It was debated and then fully funded by the legislature, which was a big battle and an important sign of political support and strength. And then it got implemented in fall of 2019 and winter of 2020. That process was led by a facilitator, Jim Cramer, brought a lot of different folks together and began what's been a hard conversation. And I think Jim and Washington State and Governor Inslee deserve a lot of credit for the progress that was made in that conversation, bringing people together, if people listening, people sharing, and that set a, I think, a new tone in the region, not by itself, but it contributed to it, of people beginning to come together and try to figure out solutions that can work in both directions or in all directions. So that process ended in March. A report came out. It's publicly available, and you know the governor used some of the findings of that report in Washington State's comments around the FEIS, which I will note, Governor Inslee recognized that the FEIS, at least the DEIS, was inadequate. And he pointed towards the need for a bigger conversation that's focused on a larger set of goals. That's one of those signs of political progress, right? Leadership starting to emerge on a topic that was a few years ago taboo and sort of untouchable by the political class. Because of the pandemic, funding for the second phase of a stakeholder process sponsored by Washington State was, you know, basically withdrawn and focused on other important priorities. There's a lot of people and communities that are hurting right now, and a lot of programs have contracted in order to prioritize those needs. Having said that, there's a number of conversations that are continuing. Save Our Wild Salmon, I'm part of a ongoing conversation with a number of other conservation groups and almost a dozen utility leaders from across the Northwest that is working at understanding each other's needs and interested in exploring ways they can both be met. And if there are solutions that are different than what we've been trying available moving forward, that's one conversation that's going on. My colleague Sam Mace, based in Spokane, and some others are involved in conversations with leaders and representatives in the agricultural sector, in the transportation sector, having similar dialogues and exploring solutions together. So there's a bunch of conversations going on. I think that there's trust building. These are urgent conversations. They're critical, and they've been, I think, hampered a bit in our ability to make progress by COVID, which has made in-person meetings much more challenging than they would have been otherwise. And I think sometimes those in-person meetings, especially for new relationships, is very, very helpful. The other thing I'll point to, and those aren't the only sort of direct stakeholder conversations that are underway, but those are a couple of them. There's also the four states right now are working together and exploring ways to perhaps host a regional conversation looking at long-term solutions as a response to an FEIS that, as we've talked about, was widely panned by almost all interests in the region. Only a few folks really spoke out in support of that FEIS and the biological opinion or federal salmon plan that was based on the FEIS. At this point, I'm not aware of any sort of public announcements around what the four govs are up to or the four states are up to, but I think we should stay tuned. I think this fall we might learn more. And I would then just emphasize, and I'll probably do it again before we part, the need for our elected officials, including Jay Inslee, Maria Cantwell, Patty Murray, for contacts into them, pressing them for their leadership and engagement, working with other policymakers, working with the tribes, critical co-managers of the resource, working with stakeholders to develop solutions that are going to move us forward quickly, effectively, and together.
Yeah, it sure seems like getting all the states together would make the clearest pathway forward. If people are inspired by Telequa's birth and they want to get involved right now, what do you think that they should do?
That's a good question. The four state the just to clarify one point, the four state conversation, if it gets off the ground, is an important step. It's a demonstration of leadership emerging in the region that we haven't seen before and is much needed. Having said that, when it comes to the lower snake, there are obviously a number of federal connections, and that means that there's going to be an important role for Congress to play in any kind of big regional solutions. And so I just want to emphasize that the governor's stepping forward is a good thing. They need to hear that we don't have a lot of time, and that they need to work with urgency to develop solutions, big solutions that move everyone forward together in a lower snake. And it's also important to recognize that the governors can't carry the day by themselves. There's a critical role for Congress. If we're going to restore the Lower Snake River, it will require congressional involvement, leadership, support for a number of actions at the federal level. In part, it's going to require some funds. It's also going to require permission, authorities to remove the Lower Snake River dams, and it's going to require some other elements. We've got to move forward in a way that doesn't leave, agricultural communities that would be affected behind, or the energy system is going to need transition investments, and Congress has a role to play here. And so I want to emphasize that dual role. We got to get the governors moving forward and leading, and we also need Congress, and they can't sit back and wait. We need them sort of active participants because the urgency is so great. In terms of what people can do, I mean, there was a meeting recently that was reported to me with a Senate office in the region, and it was reported that salmon and orca remain in the top four or five issues that the office hears about on a regular basis. I think that's really important. And we've got to keep up that kind of contact. So people can call and write. People can also organize their family members and their friends to call and write. That's one thing that we just got to keep, a relentless drumbeat on these electeds that are that we frankly need more from. The other thing that people should do, Whale Scout is a great organization. Save Our Wild Salmon there's a number of organizations in the region that are working hard on this issue, and make sure you're on their mailing lists and keeping yourself informed on recent developments and opportunities and priorities. I think that's a really important thing. So, reaching out to electeds, organizing and educating, family members, colleagues, friends, and then supporting and getting tied into the organizations that are working so hard in the region to move this issue forward. Those are a few thoughts that come to mind.
Yes, Whale Scout teamed up with a couple other organizations, and we sent a letter to Governor Inslee and other elected officials basically saying that the final environmental impact statement did not go far enough. But also, it was encouraging, too, because Inslee has taken some really positive steps in the last couple of years protecting orcas and salmon, including advocating for a project on the Chehalis River that did not include a dam, right? So he's already making steps saying no new dams, right? So you know, I'm encouraged by this work going forward, and you can look at our letter on the Whale Scout website, whalescout.org, and it's a great thing to be doing while everyone is at home, writing letters and being advocates from home. If people want to learn more about the work that you are doing and other ways to get involved, where can you direct them?
They can visit our website, it's www.wildsalmon.org. We've got you can sign up to receive newsletters and action alerts and other announcements. We have a webinar series that we're organizing for the month of October. There's going to be three, with one in particular that focuses on the southern resident orca Snake River salmon connection and the sort of issues more broadly. So I encourage people to keep an eye on our website. Those announcements haven't quite gone out, but they probably will next week. So that's one way of people can always reach directly out to me, joseph@wildsalmon.org. And I want to return back to something you said a moment ago, which I want to emphasize. You properly acknowledged the emerging leadership of Governor Inslee. And I think I just want to agree with you that that's true. He has covered some ground in the last several years. And we need to acknowledge that. He needs to hear that. He needs to hear thanks. And we also need to be pushing him to take the next steps because we're not where we need to be. But I do think that when our leaders start engaging and doing things that are needed, advocating for necessary policy change, it's important to give them credit and support that and call it out and thank them. As we also just need to continue to press because we all know we're not where we need to be, and time is short for both salmon and orca.
Absolutely. I will post links to those webinars and the website on the show notes today. If you would like to learn more about this issue, I encourage you to go back and listen to our previous podcast that we recorded earlier this year. We are doing video podcasts, so if you're listening to us on iTunes, check out our YouTube channel. Just go up to the search bar and search Whale Scout. And as always, please subscribe, and we will talk to you again very soon. Thank you.